Hello and welcome to the Ship Energy Podcast. This is Mark Williams speaking to you from sunny Cambridge in the UK. My guest today is Di Gilpin, the founder and CEO at Smart Green Shipping. And Di is going to tell us all about Smart Green Shipping and her background in a little while. But Di, before we get into the nuts and bolts of that, I was noticing from your LinkedIn profile that you are a graduate of the Cambridge Institute of Sustainable Leadership, which makes you the third guest I've had on this podcast who has attended one program or another there. So there is a mercurial link between you all. But tell us about what you were doing there, please.
So Cambridge Institute of Sustainable Leadership is a really interesting facility for bringing business leaders, senior business leaders, up to speed with the latest climate science. And it's a really exciting program of revelation, I think, for many people. Delegates are taken on a journey from understanding perhaps what most of us understand on a day-to-day basis about climate science to really getting very high-level, detailed information from very well-versed and great communicators of climate science. So it's a really interesting program to be part of, and I think what we're seeing is that education process that started was a few years ago that I was involved. It starts, but we're starting to see that awareness of the importance of climate science and the impacts it will have on business following through as we kind of see that the business community is taking perhaps stronger action than political community around climate change, and so I think CISL has been really influential in helping to drive that change. It's non-judgmental but very informative. It's a really good program.
I see. I should have to go and have a look. Anyway, this is not why I got you on to become a somebody to champion and advertise this Cambridge Judge Business School program, but to talk about your own business, Smart Green Shipping. So please, could you give us an introduction to Smart Green Shipping and your background in it, please?
Sure, yeah. So I started out working in the cellular telephone industry many, many years ago when people told you that cell phones weren't going to ever catch on. And oddly enough, they have. And they're now probably the bane of many people's lives. But I think what's interesting about innovation is it's kind of unruly and unpredictable, and we think we know what's going to happen and we don't. And as we are finding ourselves now at this juxtaposition between the oil world and the post-oil world, or the fossil fuel world and the post-fossil fuel world, we're having kind of these multiple innovations happening simultaneously. And so it's a really fascinating time to start thinking about, you know, how does innovation work and what are we doing with it? So I have worked in motor racing and yacht racing, but also in the renewable energy industry. And with the managing director of B9 Shipping, of the B9 Energy Group, we set up B9 Shipping back in 2009, because we've been working in renewable energy. Offshore wind was powering starting to move into powering the grid. Why wouldn't offshore wind be used for powering ships, since we've got 8,000 or so years of history of moving ships by wind? But it's, you know, using 21st century solutions, using digital systems, using high value manufacturing systems. So we've been working on that. B9 was sold around 2014, and so we effectively rebranded the company. But when we started out, we designed 100% renewable powered ship, which was too rich for the market because the policy wasn't in place to drive change. And so we have shifted now to looking at retrofit wing sails for existing vessels to elongate the life of existing assets, I think.
So Smart Green Shipping is a designer of vessels or of technology?
So we call ourselves a systems design house because we're looking at the system. What is it we're trying to achieve here? We're trying to decarbonize shipping as rapidly as possible in line with the climate science that we were referring to earlier. Mm-hmm. And wind is an obvious first choice, given that we have a short-term challenge as well as a longer-term challenge. So we see the need for alternative fuels as absolutely essential, but they are not close to market. We have increasing emissions from the fleet at the moment, and we have a short window of opportunity to start reducing emissions, the cumulative emissions. So what can we do now? And I think that was a topic of conversation that we was very strong at COP, and we can talk about that in a bit if you want to. But we've got a very, very real problem. And combined with the Carbon Intensity Index and the EEXI regulation that's coming in, ship owners need to start thinking about what can they do tomorrow rather than waiting till 2050 mm-hmm. in some alternative fuel that will have magically rolled out. So I think that's, you know, what we're looking at is wing sails, wind, but that has to be enabled through data, digitalization, AI, and smart financial solutions to make it easy for the market to choose these solutions.
Now, I believe this you've got this design for this wind sail, Fast Rig, I think it's called, and you designed this entirely digitally. So all done in an AI environment rather than going out and building physical prototypes.
Yes, it's an interesting process. I mentioned earlier that I worked in yacht racing and in motor racing, and quite often technology is developed straight from a digital AI suite. It's computational fluid dynamics, which effectively replicates the real world. And you can create in this artificial world the objects that you're analyzing. So we worked with Drax, who import biofuel into the UK, and their ship owners Ultrabulk, and we modeled the Ultrabulk ship in the computational fluid dynamic suite, and we operated it in different wind speeds and different directions with and without wings, and that was that enabled us to figure out the fuel saving benefit or the emission saving benefit of using the wings on the ship or not on the ship. And then we created a route analysis solution that sailed the virtual ship, so virtually sailed the virtual ship on the same route that it would run, measuring at 6 kilometer points what the wind speed and direction was likely to be. And we were able to aggregate all of that data. We ran 16 virtual journeys across the year. And we were able to aggregate that to figure out what the likely fuel savings and emission savings would be. And that averaged over the year was at least 20%. And you know, there were some days that we could see that the wind was powering the whole ship in a kind of autumn perfect weather, and perhaps hardly any power coming from the wind in some of the either very stormy weather in the winter or light winds in the summer. So, you know, it's complicated. And so employing digital systems really helps to make it a much easier system to operate than many people perceive.
Now, for our listeners' benefit, if they don't know, Drax is a power station in the UK, isn't it, which uses biomass, wood chips, instead of coal to burn, to heat steam, to drive a turbine, to make electricity. So it counts as renewable because the wood chips are regenerative, aren't they? But those are imported by sea from the US.
Yes, exactly. And so there's a paradox there, isn't there? You know, we've got this allegedly carbon neutral fuel, but it's seaborne leg. Whilst we all know that the seaborne leg is the most efficient means of transport, it is still producing carbon emissions from that transport. So the reason why Drax are so supportive of our project and have been collaborating with us and will go on to collaborate as we build a physical demonstrator, because we do have to build a physical demonstrator. The need for decarbonising shipping is coming from the customer end, because, you know, and we know that the policy challenge in getting near-term solutions to or near-term stringent policy markers into legislation, we're looking at the customer to drive demand, and we're seeing that obviously with other big initiatives around the Coalition for Clean Shipping and so on. So we're, as a systems designer, we're looking at where are the levers that we can pull, and we've figured out that Drax would probably want to be able to be the initiators of clean shipping some years ago, and we've been working with them. And it's been immensely helpful to understand their detail activity around logistics. It's very easy as an innovator to go, oh, those guys, they need to do this. This is what we're inventive. Mm-hmm. We've got this idea. Let's put wind on ships, and it's really easy. It's very easy to power wind on ships when you're just kind of going out on the open seas. But ships have this need to discharge cargo every time they come into port, which is kind of annoying if you've got rigs in the way. So how do you manage that? What do we do? So being able to meet the crew, work with the ports, work with the ship owners, to understand all of the constraints allowed us to design something which would work for the market rather than work for the innovators.
Mm. Yes, I understand the issue as an innovator myself. I was involved in a project that got European Space Agency funding to use satellite tracking plus contextual data to provide live risk markets for shipping, but the insurance industry was not ready to pick this up. 10 years ago, when we were developing it, and we showed it to some insurers who said it's brilliant, but you'll put us out of business. we showed it to Kitak Lib at the IMO, who invited us to come and demonstrate it to him, and he said, "This is fantastic, but we can't fund it. You know, so go away and find some funding." And nobody wanted to put money into it then. Of course, everybody's doing it now. So you have to wait for the market to come to you, don't you?
But I think that's a really critical point, Mark, because getting funding at this stage of a technology development is incredibly hard, and it is perceived to be, so we all have to be Elon Musk all of a sudden, and, you know, really thrusting and, you know, so it seems to me that the funding structure is set up for entrepreneurs whose mission in life is to make as much money as possible. And I think what we are seeing is entrepreneurs who have different mission. Yes, absolutely, have to make money. It's not a sustainable business if you don't make significant amounts of money for it. But when I was in Glasgow at COP, we were part of a program called 26 for COP26. There were 26 really brilliant technology solutions for addressing the climate emergency, and all of them were looking for funding. Now, if this really is an emergency, then we need to be able to say, let's act like it. And if all of these technologies are so promising, why aren't we funding them? And waiting for the market to deliver necessary funding is not commensurate with a climate emergency.
No, it's a strange thing, isn't it? Everybody's looking for the unicorn, and most of the funders have to do the same amount of due diligence for $1 million funding as they do for a $50 million funding. So they don't get out of bed for less than.
Yeah.
So maybe your similar experience, but my hint to any budding entrepreneurs out there is don't come up with a $5 million business idea, come up with a $500 million business idea.
Yeah.
And you might get funding.
Absolutely. And I've done one of those kind of quasi Dragon's Den type pitches. I've done several of them, but I did one notable one. Mm. Where, you know, I stood up and said, "Here you go. This technology could save potentially up to 1% of total greenhouse gas emissions, and you only need to invest a couple of million dollars, and we're away." And some other guy came up and said, "Here's a dog collar that can tell you whether your dog's overweight, and it's £10,000, and I can deliver it tomorrow." And so everyone went, "Oh yeah, we'll go with a fat dog collar." And I'm just going, "Well, look at the dog.
Exactly. Yes, I reminded. We're going off topic here, but
yeah, sorry.
I needed a new cat flap, and I went to the pet shop, and I said, "Can you replace this cat flap?" And they said, "Well, we have the new model. It's £100 more than the old model." I said, "Why is it? Why is it so much more?" They said, "Well, it comes with an app." I said, "But my cat doesn't have an iPhone, so why would my cat need an app?" What a ridiculous thing. I mean, there's something shouldn't be digitalised, but...
Completely.
Fortunately, until we can send coal and oil down the telephone cables, we're still going to need ships, but we still have this issue of decarbonising them. So your fast rig wind sail could potentially reduce emissions by up to 20%, and that's very much in line with the findings that we found, for instance, from Thomas Risky from Norse Power, who came in on to see us on the podcast earlier this year. So So that's great. And I assume you would agree with him in his conclusion that wind power could or should be adopted across the cargo and passenger shipping industries. It's not just for the ESG-minded renewable power stations. This is for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, Thomas and I know each other and have been part of the International Windship Association from its inception. So, yes, we do agree on a lot of this conceptual view that it's not a bling nice to have for somebody who's doing a bit of good PR. We are moving rapidly towards an energy constrained future. We know that we have to move off fossil fuels. We know that there will be alternative fuels in good time that will be developed. But what are we doing in the meantime? And one of the paradoxes for me is that the development of alternative fuels is effectively taking offshore wind and converting it into some sort of fuel that you can then transport back to a port and put in a ship that will then sail past an offshore wind turbine that made the fuel that it's now consuming. When we know that offshore wind is simply a power source and using 21st century high value manufacturing processes, digital systems, we can develop intelligent automated systems that can start to use that power now. And, you know, I talk to people who I know in the aviation industry, they would give their eye teeth to have the capacity to do that kind of technology development right away in their fleets. So it makes sense. But I think the other point that's really interesting is, you know, the shipowning community has to brace itself, and I believe it has, that it's going to have an alternative fuel in due course. But, you know, if one of those fuels magically becomes the fuel of choice, what are we going to do then? Scrap all the ships? You know, that just seems like a bit of a kind of counterintuitive thing to do when, you know, it's not just about fossil fuels, it's about nature and materials that we're struggling with as well. So what you can do with wind is to start to improve your efficiency straight away whilst continuing to use oil. And then when you do transition to an alternative fuel, which is likely to be more expensive and significantly less energy dense, your overall demand for that fuel is reduced. And the technology from the wind power will have likely improved. So you start to get a better economic proposition for your asset.
Yes. So when we transition from fuel oil and distillates to hydrogen and ammonia and methanol, we can still use the wind.
Of course.
You know, that's still available. It's still available to us. So it's a technology you can use today which will survive the energy transition. It is as future-proof as it's possible to be at this point. So
Yeah, absolutely.
I also wanted to ask you, you know, you've been working on this. There's lots of people working in a similar space. I have a growing sense now that commercial reality is moving faster than the regulators are. So, you know, you've just come back from COP26, where you saw a large number of viable and interesting options for developing technology, low carbon technologies. And we hear a lot at the moment of ship owners saying it's time to stop talking and start doing. I get a sense that doing is happening faster than the regulators can keep up with. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, so I think, so I was in Paris for COP23, and there was one event which was hosted by the International Chamber of Shipping, and I was invited to join that event, and it was very good. At COP26 in Glasgow, there were more maritime events than you could fit into your schedule. So there were plenty of activities going on, focusing on what can we do in maritime. And I think that was unprecedented. There was a lot of conversations about shipping going on. And then on the towards the end of the fortnight, we, with Bureau Veritas and Malin Group, who we work with on the wing sails, brought together all of the organisations that had been having conversations to try and synthesise what we'd learned and what could we do next. And I get the very strong sense that there is a, you know, people who work in shipping are people who are parents, grandparents, concerned citizens. They're not only shipping executives, they are human beings. And they are concerned about this, and they can, about climate change and the impacts it will have. And they can see things that can be done today. If the regulation was in place, it would be a lot more comfortable for everybody. There would be a much more level playing field. But I do see that business is moving ahead much faster than regulation. And I think we saw after MEPC 77 that, you know, a lot of industry players came out post that conversation at IMO to say, you know, we really, really do need to move a lot faster.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess we're bumping up against the limitations of the IMO structure, aren't we? You know, it's a parliament. It can promulgate regulations, but it has no powers to enforce and police them. That's up to the member states. So the structure of the IMO mitigates against the rapid evolution or the rapid promotion of new regulations and their enforcement, because it's just not the way it's made.
Completely. And that's not dissimilar to the UN process, is it? You know, I mean, that was also inhibited by a similar sort of complexity. And so there's no implied criticism here. It's the reality that we have to face. We have to figure out how to deal with it. That's what, you know, I think what we can't afford to do is to sit around wringing our hands saying it's all their fault, all their fault, all their fault. It's all of us in this together. We're all in the same storm. We may be in different boats, but we're in the same storm. We've got to figure it out. So it's a process of acting. And I think that's the sense that I got out of all of the people that I spoke to and worked with in COP was, okay, so this is the reality that we face. Climate change coming at us really fast, and it's happening now. Regulation is really, as you say, difficult. It's stodgy. It's process. It's very hard to go at the speed we need to. But that's reality. What can we do? And that's what we're working on. You know, what can we do next?
Yeah, quite so.
And we can do wind next. That's, you know, the kind of point. But the IMO were talking about hull coatings at COP26. So there's another option. You know, there are things that we can do now that will reduce overall net demand for energy of any flavour. And that, you know, we also need to bear in mind that shipping isn't the only off-taker of any energy that will be produced in the future. So it's not as straightforward as it used to be with fossil fuels. And we have to be smart, but we are smart. So generally speaking, as a species, we're smart. Some exceptions, maybe.
Well, no doubt shipping will decarbonize as the global economy decarbonizes, because we'll be using the same fuel molecules as everybody else, whether that's hydrogen, ammonia, or spaghetti bolognese, or fairy dust, or whatever it turns out to be. But I agree with you. I think, you know, shipping is a smart business. It's demonstrated over generations an ability to change direction quickly, strategically. And I'm sure it will do so again. And I look forward very much to hearing more about smart green shipping's innovations being used as part of that transition. But we're running out of time, so it's beholden upon me to say thank you very much, Di, for coming on. It's been lovely to have you guest on the show, and great to talk to you today.
Thanks, Mark. I mean, it's been really interesting, and could have talked for ages about all of this transition stuff. It's fascinating.
I'm sure we will again. But thank you to all of our listeners out there in podcast land. And we look forward to welcoming you again to another episode of the Ship Energy Podcast very soon. Thanks, and goodbye for now.